Aggression belongs to the men. Statistics say an unplanned attack will likely come from them. So the investigation started there. Jackson, Tyler, Daniel, her father. But the police were wrong to start there, with statistics. They needed to start with Corinne, needed to know her first. Then they would have seen that perhaps there was nothing more passionate than loving someone in spite of yourself. Didn't matter who you were. If you loved Corinne, it was all passion. What the detectives wanted were facts. Names, events, grudges and slights that could boil over into a girl losing her life outside the county fair. Hannah Pardoe exposed that Corinne, the real one. But I didn't know whether it really mattered. Whether that one was any more real than the one I knew, the one living inside my head, a haunting, blurred image, twirling in a field of sunflowers. I never could grasp her, but she was the realest person I knew. "Jump," she'd said, and then she leaned in close so only I could hear and whispered, "If I were you, I'd do it." But I didn't. The facts. The facts were fluid and changed, depending on the point of view. The facts were easily distorted. The facts were not always right. What would she do, they should have asked. After I said no. After Daniel pushed her away. After Jackson abandoned her. What would she do if we all pushed her away in a single day? If she had nowhere else to go? What would she do? I can feel her cold fingers at my elbows and her whisper becomes a scream. Jump. You want to believe you're not the saddest person on earth, but there's someone worse, someone there with you, someone suffering beside you through the unfathomable darkness. Jump, she said, like I had no future, but she was wrong. So wrong. Because when I was standing on the edge of the Ferris wheel cart, my breath lost to the wind and Tyler waiting for me down below, everything became so strikingly clear. I want to tell someone about that night, about Corinne, about what she said, about me. But I don't know how. It's impossible, really. They're not separate things. They come in pairs. One event gets tied up in another, and you can't tell one story without the second. They're forever entwined in your mind. 2 days before the fair, standing in her bathroom, Corinne holding the test in her hand. 90 seconds, she said, not letting me see. The ticking of the clock from her bedroom nightstand. Tick-tock, Nick. I'm glad you think this is funny, I said. Moment of truth. She looked first, and I had the sudden urge to rip it from her hands. She smiled, flipping it around. The two blue lines, and my stomach rolled again. I sank to my knees on her perfectly white tiled floor, leaning over the toilet. She rubbed my upper back. "Shh," she said. "It'll be okay." I sat on the floor and watched as she stuffed the test deep inside the box of Skittles already in her trash can. "Don't worry," she said. Her mouth twisted into a half smile. "My mom had me when she was 18, too." I shouldn't have let her talk me into taking the test right then, in her bathroom, with her standing over me. She shouldn't have been first. Not before Tyler. "I have to go," I said. She didn't stop me as I stumbled out of her room, out of her house, down to the river, where I sat and stared at the rushing water and cried, because I knew no one else could hear me. I called for Tyler to meet me there, and I made myself stop crying before I told him. 2 days later, and I see Tyler from the top of the Ferris wheel, and I think for just a moment that I have everything. Corinne dared me to climb on the outside of the cart, and I wanted to do it. I wanted to know it was as easy as letting go and say no. I wanted to feel the rush, the power, the hope, everything my life could be. But then I felt her breath in my ear. "Jump," she said, and in that moment, I was scared of what Corinne might do. How dark she really was, deep inside. My life was just part of a game for her. A piece to move. To see how far I could bend. How much she must have hated me. Hated every one of us underneath it all. I was scared that she would push me. that Bailey would never tell, that everyone would think I wanted to die when I wanted nothing more than to live in that moment. For Tyler below and for the life we might have. All the possibilities stretching before me, existing all at once. But then I'm thrown off balance. The world skews sideways. The sting of the fist on my face. Corinne comes running to bear witness to the destruction. A girl eating ice cream watches on, a memory that never dies for her. My arm goes instinctively to my stomach as I fall to the dirt, because I've just understood how fragile everything is, how paralyzingly temporary we all are, and that something is beginning for me, something worth holding on to. I spent the rest of the afternoon after Laura's shower down by the river again until it turned dark, until I knew Daniel would be gone, until the house was empty and the walls were wet and sticky, the paint fumes suffocating. I ignored Daniel's calls, instead texting him a brief, "I'm home." "Coming here?" he texted back. "No. Going to sleep," I wrote. But I didn't sleep. I didn't do anything. I let myself have this one night to feel sorry for myself. Just one night. To mourn for Corinne and my mother, for Daniel and my father, for me and for Tyler and for all the lost things. Tomorrow, I'd pick myself up. Tomorrow, there would be no more crying. Tomorrow, I'd remember that I had kept going. The day before. Day 5. I shouldn't be here, I shouldn't be here, I shouldn't be here. I was rocking on the couch with the television on in front of me and a fresh cup of coffee in my hands, wearing yesterday's clothes, the fabric stiff and accusing against my skin. The alarm clock sounded in the bedroom, and I could choreograph the next few moments. He'd hit snooze twice, then curse repeatedly as he raced to the shower, throw on some clothes, pull a hat down over his still wet hair, fill his travel mug with yesterday's reheated coffee. I sat on the sofa, legs folded underneath me, sipping my fresh coffee from his ECC mug. Instead, Tyler came straight out of the bedroom like he'd heard the television, even though I had it only one notch off silent. He was standing in a pair of black boxers, his blue eyes completely awake. I took in his tanned chest and stomach. He'd put on a little weight since the last time I'd been home, but you didn't notice in clothes. I was the only person who could map the changes over the span of the decade, my hands tracing over every contour, like muscle memory, just as he could with me. I made myself focus on the screen, and I gestured my mug toward it. "Just catching up on the news," I said, watching the reporter's mouth move. She was standing in front of a poster of Annalise Carter, outlining the facts once more. Last seen by her brother, walking into the woods. Now entering the second day of searching, including helicopters. No sign of her. Nothing ruled out. Nothing new.
"I thought maybe you left," Tyler said.
He was almost at the couch. I kept my eyes glued to the screen. "I need a ride home. I made coffee," I said. "Fresh. In the kitchen."
"Couldn't sleep?"
His voice drifted through the apartment as he opened a cabinet. There wasn't much to it. This living room, his bedroom, and the kitchen with the island in the middle. His laptop was closed on the coffee table. "Not really," I said, which wasn't entirely true. I'd fallen into a deep and peaceful sleep almost immediately, the best since I'd been back. It was the noise from people leaving the bar at closing time that jerked me awake, and I couldn't find the way back to where I'd been. Only Tyler could do that, talking me out of my own head, letting me forget myself. I'd spent the last several hours feeling sick to my stomach. He picked up the blanket crumpled on the seat beside me and hung it over the armrest where it had been last night. He sat beside me, a little too close, mug in hand, his right arm behind me, his fingers moving absently in my hair. I felt the tension releasing, my body uncoiling itself. I closed my eyes for a second, listening to Tyler sip his coffee. This. Us. There's a comfort to it. Something too easy to get lost inside for a weekend. My phone rang on the table and I grabbed it, expecting Daniel, and felt the blood drain from my face when I saw Everett's name on the display. I set my mug down and answered. "Let me call you right back," I said, before I could register the sound of his voice. 10 minutes.
"I'm on my way into the office," he said. "I'll try you again at lunch."
"Okay, later then." I hung up and leaned forward on the couch, my head in my hands. Tyler stood.
"I have to get ready for work," he said. "I'll drop you on the way."
He headed for the bathroom, paused at the bedroom entrance.
"Just do me one favor. Don't call him the second I step into the shower."
I narrowed my eyes at his back. I wasn't going to.
"Right."
"Don't be like this," I said. "Don't." He spun around, one hand on the door jamb, the other gesturing toward me.
"You're asking me not to be like this?"
"I was upset," I said.
"I know. I was here."
"I wasn't thinking."
"That's bullshit."
He glared at me from the doorway to his bedroom. I focused on the reporter's mouth once more. "I don't want to fight with you," I said.
"No, I know exactly what you want me for."
Sharp and cutting, but nothing compared to the look on his face. Everything right about the night before, overexposed in the daylight and undeniably wrong. "I'm sorry, but what do you want from me?" His eyes grew wider, if possible.
"You're not serious," he said.
He shook his head, ran a hand down his face.
"What exactly are you sorry for, Nick? I'm just curious. For this, right now? For last year? The one before that? Or for leaving the first time without saying a goddamn word?"
I stood, my limbs shaking with adrenaline. "Oh, don't do this now. Don't bring this up now." This was our unspoken agreement. We didn't discuss it. Couldn't look back and couldn't look forward. After I graduated, the plan was to wait a year, save up some money, leave together. But Corinne disappeared and all the plans went to shit. Daniel stopped working on the renovation, gave me what money he could. I left by myself, 1 year at a community college, then transferring to a 4-year university with student housing and loans and a campus that existed unto itself, segregated from the rest of the world. Someplace safe and far away.
"Or are you sorry for changing your number?"
Tyler continued, coming a step closer.
"For coming home 5 months later like it was all nothing."
"I can't do this," I said. "We were kids, Tyler. Just kids."
"Doesn't mean it wasn't real,"
he said, his voice softening.
"We could have made it."
"Could have? Might have? There's a lot of hypothetical in that." "We didn't, Tyler. We didn't make it."
"Because you disappeared. Literally."
"I didn't disappear. I left."
"You were there one day, and then you were gone. How is that any different? Your brother had to tell me, Nick."
"I couldn't stay," I said, my voice barely making it across the room.
"I know,"
he said.
"But it wasn't a temporary thing. A temporary promise. I meant what I said to you."
He let me drive his truck because his hand was all messed up. I kept touching my fingers to my face, expecting to find something new, something more substantial than a red mark and a swollen lip.
"For real, Nick, are you okay?"
he asked. "Yes," I said. "I'm so done with them all. With Daniel, Corinne. I'm done with her games. I'm done with my dad. I'm done with this place."
"Pull over,"
he said. "Where?" The streets were dark and curvy, and there wasn't much of a shoulder, if any, in most places. But there were these outlooks over the valley, guardrails set up around tiny rectangles jutting over the rocks below.
"Anywhere."
But I thought I knew why he wanted me to pull over, and I didn't want to be caught in the glare of the headlights. "We're almost to the caverns," I said. I pulled his truck into the lot, pulled it off the road, over the lip of rocks and into the clearing, mostly hidden from view by a row of trees. I turned off the engine, unbuckled my seatbelt, but he didn't pull me toward him, didn't turn to face me at first.
"I'll take care of you. You know that,"
he said.
"I'll be good to you. I'll love you forever, Nick."
"I know you will," I said. It was the one thing I was sure of. He reached into his glove compartment and pulled out a ring. It was simple, beautiful, perfect. Two silver bands woven together, a line of blue gems where they interlocked. Forever. It's the kind of thing you say when forever has only been a handful of years, when it's not decades before you become those Russian nesting dolls. There was a small part of me that was still childish, stubborn in her hope, thinking I could somehow have everything. That Tyler could become Everett, that Everett could become Tyler. That I could be all the versions of me stacked inside one another and find someone who would want them all. But that's childhood. Before you realize that every step is a choice, that something must be given up for something to be gained, everything on a scale, a weighing of desires, an ordering of which you want more, and what you'd be willing to give for it. 10 years ago, I made that choice for the both of us, ripping off a band-aid and taking the skin with it. A clean break, I'd thought back then, but I'd never given him that choice, never let him have any say. "You disappeared," he'd said. "I left, and I'm sorry, but that was 10 years ago," I said. "I can't go back and undo it."
"You keep coming back, Nick."
I wasn't sure whether he meant to Cooley Ridge or to him. "You're going to be late." He dragged his fingers slowly and forcibly through his hair.
"You make me crazy," he said,
turning for the bathroom. The shower turned on, and I could hear the cabinet slamming, sense him losing his cool behind the closed door. It happens like this. Men losing themselves in moments of passion. We drive them to it. It's not their fault. I closed my eyes and leaned against the counter beside the refrigerator, feeling my nails digging into my palms, and slowly counted to 100. We had to exit through the front door near the bar entrance. I kept my head down to the traffic. I followed Tyler to his truck around back, rested my head against the window as we drove. We were silent on the ride home. He pulled into my driveway, and I hesitated with my fingers on the handle, staring out the window.
"Will you be okay here?"
he asked. The house. Skinny and tilted and waiting for me. Beyond that, the Carter property and the search for a missing girl. I left the car, but he lowered the passenger window.
"Nick?"
he said. I took a second to look back as I walked away. He'd lost every girl he was with whenever I came home, and the ghost of me followed him everywhere in this town. Not sure why he did it, if he really thought this time would be any different, that this time I'd stay. I was breaking him over and over every time I left, and this was something I could put an end to. A gift. A debt I owed him for everything I'd lost him. I couldn't come back after all. The distance only increases. "I can't see you anymore," I said.
"Sure, okay."
Like he didn't believe me. "Tyler, I'm asking you. Please. I can't see you anymore." Silence as he gripped the wheel tighter. "I'm ruining your life, Tyler. Can't you see that?" His silence and his stare followed me across the yard, up the porch steps, until the front door latched shut behind me. I supposed, when he looked closely, he could see that I was. The house felt different. Unsafe. Unknown. Too many possibilities existing all at once. Too many voices whispered back at me from the walls. The garage through the living room windows, so unassuming in the sunlight, and beyond, the woods stretching infinitely into the distance. No, I would not be okay here. I drove to the church and went down to the basement where Officer Fraze was organizing about 1/10 as many people as the day before. He gave me a map with a section bordered in orange highlighter, and he directed me toward two kids with jet black hair picking through yesterday's donated baked goods. "Hi," I said to the girl's back. She turned around and spoke around a piece of pound cake. "Hi," she said. She was a little older than I'd thought, younger than I was, but not quite a kid anymore. "You with us?" Us being her and a guy about the same age. 2 days of scruff on an otherwise unremarkable face. Siblings, I guessed, from the hair color. Looks like it, I said. I'm Britt, she said. This is Seth. She looked down at the map, and I saw her roots were plain brown, several shades lighter than the rest of her hair. Maybe not siblings. They have us following the river, looks like. Should be easy enough.
Let's park at CVS, Seth said. I need some Advil or something.
He winced for impact. Hangover, Britt whispered, feeding him a piece of cake with her fingers. I followed Seth's pickup and waited for him to come out of the store. Besides the Advil or something, he also got some candy, and the crinkling wrappers accompanied us as we crossed the street and entered the woods. He chewed loudly until we picked up a curve of the river, and then all I could hear was the water trickling along. I hugged the edge, keeping my gaze on the water, looking for objects that might be hidden underneath. The water wasn't deep, and I could see the rocks and roots below, even in the shade. We reached a clearing, the sunlight bright, my eyes narrowing in response, and the glare of the sun reflected off the surface too sharply, blurring my vision. You okay? Britt had her fingers curled in my sleeve just as I felt my balance start to lean. Yeah, I said, checking to see if maybe she fell in. Britt pulled me farther from the edge. Careful, she said. I heard they'll get men in the water eventually, but if she's in there... She pointed down the bank. It's not like it matters how fast we find her. Seth unwrapped another candy, shoved the wrapper in the pocket of his pants.
She'd think that was fitting, I bet, he said. Very Ophelia. Very art. Very significant.
You were friends with her? I asked. The girl nodded. Yeah, I guess. Except not really. I mean, we were, kind of, before she became art school Annalise. What was she before? Just like the rest of us, she said. Britt picked a slightly worn path a little farther from the river, guiding me along with her. I always thought she was quiet, I said. Annalise? I guess. But also not. She was loud with her art. Like, she did the murals for our school play, and she hid all these tiny, sick details in them. We didn't notice until after. It was like a tribute to everyone she hated at school. Seth laughed, but Britt wasn't smiling. It was so subtle, enough to deny. And for us to point it out meant admitting to something, you know? She walked the halls with this obnoxious smile all the time, like she was getting away with something and we all knew it. She had a meanness in her. We all do. Corinne had shown us that.
So, no, Seth added. We weren't friends.
Any clue where she'd go? Seth chewed the candy between his back teeth, grinding as he spoke.
Bet she was never even in the woods, he said.
Her brother said, I started.
Her brother, Seth said. Useless piece of crap. Want to know why Bryce was hanging out his window after midnight on a Monday night? Probably because he didn't want his mom to smell the pot.
Heard he's dropping out, Britt added. A kid with no promise, the opposite of his sister, watching her image disappear through the smoke.
Nobody really trusts him, but it's not like there's anything else to go by, Seth said.
You don't believe it, that she wandered off into the woods? After midnight? She goes for a walk into the woods with her purse? Come on, Britt said. Then why are you here? Seth shrugged, unwrapped another candy.
Because we were given the day off if we did this instead.
Britt must have noticed the look on my face. Besides, there are helicopters. If she's out here, they'll find her. I looked up at the canopy of leaves and down at the water rushing by and hoped that it was a lie she was telling herself to feel better about not caring. You could get lost in these woods so easily. You could lose yourself in them. You could live an entire secret history inside of them, a decade's worth, with no witnesses. I had come down to this river the winter after I left, the first time I was home. I'd enrolled in a school 100 miles east, used Daniel's money to find a cheap place with 3 roommates, got a job in the registration office, which would turn full-time in the summer, went home for a week over Christmas break, which turned into 2 because a snowstorm came and I couldn't leave. I put on my snow boots and my down jacket, pulled a hat over my newly red hair, trudged down to the river where my lungs burned with deep breaths and the icicles shone against the bank. and I saw that I was not alone. We walked slowly down the bank on opposite sides until we reached the log thrown across at the narrow gap. I watched as Tyler balanced on the trunk, and I laughed when he slipped, catching himself with his gloved fingers. I smiled when he made it all the way across.
"I like your hair,"
he said. "You don't have to lie." His gloves smelled like wool and chafed at my skin, just like the scruff of his jawline. His lips were cracked and thirsty, and his skin was warm against the cold. We made a pact that day in our silence, that we would not speak of the things that had happened. We would not speak of all we had lost. Britt and Seth followed the river until it branched, which was the mark on the map for the end of our search area. Seth spun on his heel, but I stared at the two different paths, remembering where they led, one behind the caverns, the other snaked around the open fields of the fair, cutting close to Riverfall Motel in all its run-down glory. "Hey, Nick," Britt said. Had I given her my name? Did she know who I was? "Snap out of it, sister." "I'm going to keep going," I said. "Like hell," she said. "Didn't you get a copy of the rules? We stay together, we return together, we report together." I followed them back to the road, followed them back to check in with Officer Fraze, then took one of the missing flyers and drove down to Riverfall Motel by myself. Riverfall Motel was a strip of 20 identical rooms set just back from the road, with a parking lot of slanted spaces in front of each door. It was yellow and falling to disrepair, but there were cars out front, probably because of the fair, maybe some of the workers. This was where Hannah Pardo had been stationed for the summer 10 years ago. I used to drive by sometimes just to see if her car was still here. I parked in front of the office, let myself in, watched the man from the counter tear his gaze from a soap opera that he didn't bother turning off.
"Can I help you?"
he asked. I put Annalise's flyer down on the counter, felt her eyes staring up at me, twisted the paper around so it was facing him. "Have you seen this woman?"
"Annalise Carter? The police have already been here." "Nope, never seen her."
He was already facing the television again. "Okay, thanks." I knocked on each door, getting no response from most, even some with cars out front. People wanting privacy. People who had secrets to keep. At the third room, I heard footsteps, saw a shadow under the door, knew someone was looking out the peephole back at me, but the doorknob didn't turn. I flipped the flyer around, holding it up to the peephole. "I'm looking for this girl," I said. The door cracked open. The room smelled stale and sour, as if alcohol and milk had been ground into the carpet. The world was full of people who wanted to give information, who sometimes fabricated it in the hope that it would lead somewhere. But the world was also full of people who had no intention of going anywhere near the police, who saw things and kept them hidden, a group of people who could piece together the truth if they were so inclined. The man didn't open the door all the way, but I could see his face, bearded and pockmarked. I didn't know why he was here, and I didn't honestly care. "I'm not with the police," I said. "I'm just her friend, just looking for her. I thought maybe she'd come here. Have you seen her?" His eyes scanned me slowly, taking it all in, from my sneakers caked in mud to my old T-shirt and my hair falling from my ponytail. He tilted his head, leaning closer.
"Maybe,"
he said through the crack in the door.
"A friend, you say?"
Pressing his face closer, his eyes fixed on mine. I met his stare, refusing to step back. "No," I said, "not a friend, but I need to find her." He smiled then, his teeth yellowed but straight, like he'd had braces once.
"Maybe there was a girl I saw running from the woods. Maybe she slid open the window to the room at the end down there. Maybe she went inside. None of my business, though."
"Thank you," I said as the door closed. "Thank you." "See, Annalise? Someone is always watching." I walked around back and tried the window, which wasn't locked. I shimmied through the motel window and found myself in an empty room with no sign of Annalise. I checked the shower, the closet, Under the bed. There was nothing. I closed my eyes and pictured her sprinting through the woods, shimmying inside this room like I'd just done. Why was she here? What did she want? A place to breathe. A place to gather her thoughts. A place to make a plan. There was no impression in the mattress. No towel askew in the bathroom. I picked up the phone, listened to the dial tone. Information. I'd call an operator. If I didn't have my phone, I'd call for a number. I checked the pad of paper beside the phone and could make out a few pressure points, but nothing more. Couldn't see a number if she'd written one. I hit redial. The phone rang four times, and then...
You've reached the Farrells. We're not home right now, but we'll get back to you just as soon as we're in.
Laura's voice. Annalise had called my brother's house. She'd been at this motel, and she'd called my brother. And then, she'd disappeared. I drove home, found Daniel working on the house, hosing down the ground beside the garage, loading up his car with debris. Any word? I asked, shielding my eyes from the glare in the front yard.
Nothing.
He rolled the free hose on a reel, following the trail toward the side of the house. I shifted from foot to foot. What haven't you told me about Annalise, Daniel? He stopped moving, dropped the reel, cut his eyes to me.
Are you saying you don't believe me?
What haven't you told me about Corinne? Would he tell me, or would he stick to his official statement? You can talk to me, I said. He picked up the reel again. There were voices coming from the woods, and his head whipped in that direction.
The police are in the woods, he said. Have you eaten? Laura sent me with leftovers. Go on in the house, Nick.
I nodded, went inside, reheated the stew in a pot on the stove, watched Daniel through the window, realizing how he knew it was the police just out of sight. He had been watching, standing out there, watching the woods and listening. What haven't you told me, Daniel? We communicated in the space between words, and I wondered, what was he saying now? The day before. Day four. The rain had trickled to a stop, but continued to drip from the leaves, falling on the roof like it was keeping time. Tick-tock, Nick. The clock in the kitchen read 5 a.m., and there was still no sign of Daniel or Tyler's truck. Have you heard from him? I asked, filling a glass from the sink tap.
How would I hear from him, Nick?
We stared at Daniel's phone, sitting on the kitchen table. My hands shook as I handed Tyler a glass of water. His fingers stained the base with powder as he gulped it down, rubbing his other hand across the back of his neck. The sky was starting to lighten on the horizon.
I need to get home,
he said. He was covered in dirt and grime, and his hands were white, like mine.
I have to change before the search. I need a goddamn shower. Can I take your car? I'll swing by after when Dan brings my truck back.
He handed me the glass, and I drained the rest. I'm not sure how that would look. My car at your place? People will talk.
People always talk,
he said. It's different now.
Why? Because you're engaged? We can be friends, can't we?
We'd never been friends. Not before and not after. I wouldn't even know how to start. Because your girlfriend is missing, I said. Be smart, Tyler. His head snapped to attention. Be smart. Then he leaned back so his head was resting against the freezer.
I can't believe this is happening. Tell me this isn't happening.
It's happening.
I'm going to be a suspect if she doesn't turn up, aren't I?
He asked. Tyler, you're going to be the suspect, like Jackson had been. The boyfriend. It was the simplest explanation. He squeezed his eyes shut, and I wanted to run my fingers through his hair, press my thumbs into the base of his skull like I used to do whenever his neck was stiff from work. Use my shower, I said. I can find something from my dad's room for you to wear. You shouldn't go home like this. He looked down at his clothes, at his legs, at his hands.
Yeah. Okay.
I cleaned the floor with damp rags, trying to mop up all the streaks, all the footprints, and I tossed them into the washing machine after. I heard the groan of the pipes, and then the sound of the shower curtain being pulled aside as I went to rifle through my dad's old things. Dad's work clothes would be too small for Tyler. He'd have to settle for gray frayed sweatpants that didn't make the moving list and an old stained shirt from the few times Dad worked in the yard. I let myself into the bathroom, the moisture of the room clinging to my skin, already coating the mirror. "It's just me," I said, leaving the clothes on top of the sink.
"Hey,"
he said.
"Hold on."
I stood with my back against the door, watching the gray and black striped shower curtain move, the obscured outline of his shadow. It felt easier to talk with the curtain between us, without having to look directly at each other.
"I got a new place,"
he said. "Where?"
"Over Kelly's. It's not much, just an apartment, but there's a couch and a blanket, and you can stay with me, Nick. No strings attached. You don't have to stay here."
I laughed, and it sounded harsh. That's a terrible idea for so many reasons.
"Wouldn't be the worst one this week,"
he said, as I scooped up his dirty pile of clothes. I opened the bathroom door, felt the rush of cooler air as I stepped outside. "I'm washing your clothes. Save me some hot water." By the time I got back to my room, he was in my dad's clothes, rubbing my towel over his hair. He was looking out the window at the garage, and I stood beside him, doing the same. He turned to face me, used his thumb to wipe the residue from my face. "I don't understand what's happening," I said. I felt the tears rising unexpectedly, and Tyler tilted my face up. "How..."
"Hey,"
he said.
"Don't do this to yourself. It's taken care of, okay?"
I tried to let the words work their way into my head. "I've got you at 16. I love you at 17. Forever at 18. But the distance was too great. I couldn't get back to it. Instead, the familiar sound of Tyler's truck turning into the driveway jarred me into action. "Daniel's back," I said, striding out of the room, racing down the stairs. Daniel drove up the driveway as I hopped down the front steps, Tyler a step behind. Daniel slid out of the driver's seat without looking at us, tossed the keys to Tyler, and went straight for his own car.
"I gotta go,"
he said, not making eye contact. "Daniel, wait," I said.
"I need to go,"
he said. I crossed the yard after him but didn't know what to say once I had his attention. I looked to Tyler for help, but he was loading up his truck, carrying supplies and using a tarp to protect it all. "What did you tell Laura?" I asked. Daniel opened the car door.
"That I was here. That we were working late." "See you at the search,"
Tyler called, hopping in the truck. I made it inside before throwing up, the sink coated with water and bile and fine white powder. I cleaned the kitchen, took a scalding shower, and mopped the floors. When the dryer finished, I folded Tyler's clothes and stuffed them in the bottom drawer of my empty dresser, out of sight. We met in the church basement. Everyone was there, nearly all of Cooley Ridge taking off from work, cramped together in the rec room, overflowing into the kitchen, crowding down the steps. We rally in a crisis. We rise to the tragedy. Suffer a death and we will feed you for a year. Disappear and we will scour the earth until you are found. Bricks was set up in front, standing on a chair. His hairline was starting to recede, which you could see because he kept his hair buzzed almost to the scalp. I had to stand on my toes, pushing through the crowd to see what he was gesturing toward. What was he talking about? I started picking up snippets of conversation, losing Brix's voice. Disappeared. Corinne Prescott. Wandered off. Taken. Monsters.
In grids.
There was a hand on my shoulder. I needed to focus. Laura. I looked at her over my shoulder and she raised an eyebrow. "Okay," she mouthed. I nodded. Brix was pointing to a map of Cooley Ridge, the woods beyond, the river snaking through.
"What do they think?" Laura whispered. "That she got lost out there?"
I broke into a light sweat. I couldn't see Daniel, but he must have been nearby if Laura was here. I couldn't find Tyler either. Brix was holding up the clipboard we'd signed in on.
We've assigned you to a grid, each with a leader.
He held up a purple rectangle.
When I call your name, follow Officer Frey's here.
He started breaking us into teams, and Laura leaned in.
Y'all are working too hard on that house. You really need to take it easier, both of you.
I know, I said, keeping my eyes on Bricks.
Besides, she said, he's supposed to be painting the nursery. Honestly, I could give birth any moment now.
I whipped my head around.
Don't worry, I'm not. Should you even be here? I asked.
Nick Farrell.
I pushed through the crowd, following Officer Frey's, not knowing anyone else in my group other than by family association. There were 8 of us on the team.
The ground will be wet,
he said,
so watch your footing, and always keep a visual on the person to your side. Move as one at the same rate, and make sure you're all accounted for on your way out. We don't have enough radios, so...
He eyed the group, handed the radio to an older man whom I recognized as the father of someone I went to school with.
Radio back if you find anything.
Hey, I said, and Officer Frey's half looked at me, heading toward the next group. If he recognized me, he didn't let on. Did you contact her father? Her friends from college?
Yeah, we're on it. We know how to run an investigation. Or do you have something to add? Didn't realize you'd moved back, Nick.
The hairs on the back of my neck stood on end. I didn't. I'm just in town for a little while. He paused, his mind grasping for something, sorting through the pieces.
You staying at your dad's old place?
Yes.
Happen to see anything in the woods night before last? Hear anything unusual? Anything like that?
I shook my head. No, sir, no, sir, no, sir. He focused on me for a moment too long.
Off you go, then,
he said. He scanned the crowd before moving on to the next group. I knew exactly who he was looking for. We started near the back of Annalisa's house, heading in the direction of the river. The search ended up being tedious work, exacerbated by an older lady who couldn't keep up. We moved at a snail's pace, and then she'd stop to pick up anything that looked out of place. A rock that had been displaced, a pile of sticks, a marker on a tree. The man in charge of our group by decree of holding the radio kept reminding her,
"We're looking for her. We're not investigating a crime scene."
We weren't close enough to talk to one another in quiet conversation. We were supposed to be listening anyway, for calls for help or something. Every once in a while, the girl on the edge would call, "Annalise? Annalise Carter?" Because there might be more than one Annalise lost in these woods. As we approached the river, we ran into another team. "We went too far," I said. Our leader, Brad, examined the map.
"Nah, we've got to the edge of the river. They're out of their zone." "Hey, you're out of zone."
"What?"
a man yelled back.
"I said you're in the wrong place."
They yelled across the expanse. Then the two leaders walked toward each other, their maps out, arguing. I sat on a tree stump, waiting it out. This was a waste. We had no idea if the teams were covering the right sections. Not everyone was familiar with the woods. Not everyone knew the right landmarks.
"I think I found something."
The old lady was crouched over a pile of leaves about 10 feet from the river. The girl beside me rolled her eyes. The old lady picked up something that glinted in the sunlight, holding it over her head, squinting.
"What is it?"
she asked. I rose, slowly making my way toward them.
"A buckle?"
someone said.
"For a fairy, it's tiny."
"Oh," she said. "Like from a bracelet, maybe?"
She turned it over in her hands. It had 2 letters floating inside a circle, the edges coated in mud.
"The initials are M.K., so it can't be hers."
"Oh, for Christ's sake," I said. "Are we really pulling every piece of trash from the forest? This is ridiculous."
"Should you be touching that?"
said a teen who had probably seen one too many cop shows. The old lady frowned, put it back down, moved the leaves around to make it look natural. "That doesn't really work," I said. I picked it back up, turned it over in my hand. "It's from a dog leash. Did she have a dog?"
"I don't think so," the kid said.
Brad gestured for us to turn around.
"Come on,"
he said.
"Let's start back."
I trailed the others by a few feet, scanning the surrounding ground as we moved. I slid the buckle into my back pocket. It wasn't from a leash or a collar or a bracelet. I recognized that logo. It was from a purse. I took the long way home, stopping at CVS, buying a soda, using the bathroom, dumping the buckle in the trash can, waving to Luke Aberdeen on the way out. I stood in front of my house, tilting my head to the side, trying to see it as a stranger might. Nothing special, nothing to make someone look twice. My feet started sinking in a spot of mud, and I pulled them out, the suction gripping my sneakers before dislodging. I walked toward the porch, my steps slow and labored, as if my feet were sticking to the earth. I waited by the front porch, willing myself to go inside. The secrets this house had kept locked away, mine included, Daniel's and my father's, and those that belonged to the generation before, in the walls, under the floorboards, within the earth. I imagined Corinne shaking out a can of gasoline and me taking a match to the splintered edge of the porch, both of us standing too close as the wood warped and popped, the house igniting, turning to rubble, to smoke and ash, the flames jumping to the extended branch of a tree, taking the woods along with them.
"What are you doing?"
I peered over my shoulder at Tyler walking from his truck, his legs moving as slowly as mine had. I turned back to the house, to the window above the sloped roof. Imagining a fire, I said.
"Ah,"
he said, his hand on the small of my back as he stood beside me. He watched the same splintered porch, the same window, and I could imagine him picturing the same thing.
"When did you last eat?"
he asked. "I don't know," I said.
"Come on. I picked up dinner."
The bar was somber, but it wasn't empty. Tyler stood between me and the door, obstructing the view as we walked past the entrance, the bag of Chinese takeout tucked under his arm. I followed him up the narrow stairwell, took the bag from him as he unlocked the door, and held it open for me with his foot.
"So, this is it,"
he said. I left the bag of food on the kitchen island directly to my left. The place could use some upgraded appliances, a fresh coat of paint, a throw rug or two over the scuffed wood floors, but in other ways, it suited him perfectly. It had what he needed. Couch, TV, kitchen, bedroom. If something didn't matter to Tyler, he didn't do it for the sake of anyone else. He unloaded the food, serving it on ceramic plates, while I wandered the apartment, checking out the details. His bed was made. He had a queen, and the comforter was plain and beige. The dresser that he'd had growing up was in the corner, and there was a newer one that was so far from matching, it somehow managed to work. The bathroom door was open, shaving cream on the counter, soap in a dish. I checked the closet on the way out. Men's clothes only, camping gear in the corner.
"Does it pass inspection?"
he called as I wandered back to the kitchen. He handed me a plate over the island. "You got my favorite," I said.
"I know I did."
He walked to the couch, slid to the floor, his back resting against the cushions, and placed two beers on the coffee table in front of him. I sat beside him on the floor. "Not a fan of chairs, I see."
"I've only been here 6 months. Chairs are next on my list,"
he said, scooping fried rice into his mouth.
"Nick,"
he said, pointing his fork to the plate in front of me.
"You really need to eat something."
My stomach clenched as I stared at the pile of food. I took a sip of the beer, leaning back against the couch. "What kind of purse did Annalise use?" I asked. I felt Tyler tense beside me.
"I don't want to talk about Annalise."
"It's important. I need to know."
"Okay, it was..."
He paused, thinking.
"I don't know. It was dark green."
"But do you know the brand?"
"No, I definitely don't know the brand. Are you going to tell me why you're asking?"
"We found something in my group. A buckle from a Michael Kors purse, down by the river." I took a deep breath. "I'm pretty sure it's hers." He slid his plate onto the table, took a long pull from the beer bottle.
"And where is this buckle now?"
I looked over at him, into his bloodshot eyes. In the garbage can in the women's restroom of CVS. He pressed his fingers to the bridge of his nose.
Nick, you can't do this. You can't mess with the investigation or people will wonder why. I really think she's fine.
I really think she's not, I said. I think when people disappear, it's because they're not okay, Tyler.
Hey,
he said.
Don't cry.
I'm not, I said, resting my head on my arm, wiping away the evidence. Sorry. God, I've barely slept in, what, almost 3 days? And I'm losing it.
You're not losing it,
he said.
You're here with me, and you're fine.
I laughed. That's not the definition of fine. I feel like the whole world is off balance, like I'm losing my shit, like there's this cliff, and I don't even realize I'm on the edge.
But you do realize it, and that's the definition of holding your shit together.
I shook my head but took a bite of the pork roll, forcing it down. Are you okay? I asked him.
Not really.
Our plates sat on the table beside half-empty bottles of beer. I don't know what I'm doing here, I said.
We're just friends having dinner after a really shitty day.
Are we? Friends, I mean?
We're whatever you want us to be, Nick.
Don't do that.
What?
Lie, I said.
Yeah,
he said. He rested his arm on the couch behind me, making space for me. I leaned into his side, and he slid an arm around me, and we sat there, staring at the blank television across the room. If it was from her purse, I said, she's not okay. I should be out there. I should be looking for her purse.
Nick, you need to relax.
I felt his slow exhale against my forehead. We sat in silence, but the sounds of people leaving the bar drifted up from the window. I don't know what to do about the house. Taking a bite of the dinner had been a mistake. I took a deep breath, trying to hold my shit together. I can't sleep in that house, I said.
So don't,
he said.
This couch pulls out. You can have my bed. You really need to get some rest.
People will...
Just for tonight. Nobody knows you're here.
I rested my head on his shoulder, closed my eyes, felt his fingers absently near the bottom of my hair, which suddenly seemed too intimate, even though he was barely touching me. But maybe there was nothing more intimate than someone knowing all your secrets, every one of them, and sitting beside you anyway, buying your favorite food, running his fingers absently through your hair so you can sleep.
By the way,
he said,
I like your hair.
I smiled, trying not to think of tomorrow. One day I could come back here and he could be gone. One day I could walk through the woods, fade to nothing, leaving behind nothing but the buckle from a purse. All of us eventually stacked up in boxes in the police station or under the earth, passed over, passed by, with nobody left to find us. I lifted my head off his shoulder, shifting so I was on top of him, one leg on either side, my arms sliding behind his neck, my fingers working through his hair.
Wait, don't think this is... That's not why
I pulled my shirt over my head, saw his gaze drift to the scar on my shoulder, and then away, as it always did. Tyler gripped my thighs, holding me still, rested his forehead against my bare shoulder, his breathing shallow. If there's a feeling to coming home, something comforting and nostalgic, a mother's cooking, a family pet sleeping at the foot of the bed, an old hammock strung between trees in the yard, for me, it's this. It's Tyler. Knowing that there's someone who has seen all the different versions of me, watched as they stacked themselves away inside one another, knows all the choices I've made, the lies I've told, the things I've lost, and still. Are you going to make me say please? I asked. I felt his breath on the space between my shoulder and my neck, his lips moving as he spoke.
No,
he said.
Never.
And he pulled my head down to his. Because the thing about Tyler is, he always gives me exactly what I'm asking for. The day before. Day 3. Annalise was unofficially declared missing when the police station opened that morning, but the storms rolling through the mountains meant there would be no searching today. She was 23 years old and had been missing only a day, but it was the circumstances that got the police curious. Her brother said he saw her walk into the woods sometime after midnight. Her mother went to get her for their trip to visit a grad school around lunch, but she wasn't there. Her cell went straight to voicemail. Her purse was gone. And then there was the text message, the one she sent to Officer Mark Stewart, the one that asked if they could set up a time to discuss the Corinne Prescott case. Tyler showed up at my place just after breakfast, dressed in khakis and a button-down. He was pacing the downstairs, leaving rainy footprints across the floor.
That message is going to make everyone uneasy around here.
Did the police have any idea why she sent it?
Not that I heard. Doesn't matter, though. It's one hell of a coincidence, don't you think?
He opened his mouth to say more, but we heard tires crunching gravel under the rain. Someone's here, I said, walking to the window. A red SUV I didn't recognize had pulled into my driveway and parked behind Tyler's truck. A woman about my dad's age stepped out, hair gray like his, face round and soft, and pulled an umbrella over her head, keeping her eyes on the woods as she walked up the front porch steps. She was built thicker than Annalise, but her eyes were as large and unsettling. Annalise's mom, I said, heading for the door. I pressed my back to the door, watched him stare at the wall past me as if he could see through it. Why are you here, Tyler? Why are you here? He blinked twice before responding.
I'm fixing the air conditioning, he said.
Then go fix it, I hissed, before pulling open the front door. Her mother was facing the driveway, her umbrella still up even though she was under the protection of the porch. The rain dripped off the spokes in slow motion. Hi, Mrs. Carter. I pushed open the screen door and stood on the threshold. She turned her face slowly toward me, her eyes lingering a moment behind. She was looking at my driveway, at Tyler's truck. Good morning, Nick. It's nice to see you home. Manners first, always. You too. I heard about Annalise. Any word? She shook her head, let the umbrella rest against her side. My son says he saw her walking in the woods. She's like that, you know. Keeps her own company. Goes for walks. I've seen her out there. It's not too unusual, really. But she and I had plans yesterday. And her phone... Well... She pressed her lips together. It would have been late. After midnight. Since we share property, I wanted to check. Any chance you saw her? Or anyone? Anything? No, I'm sorry. I was cleaning the house and I fell asleep early. I didn't notice anything. She nodded. Is that Tyler Ellison's truck, dear? Oh, yes. My brother hired him to do some work on the house for us. I don't have his number and I need to talk to him. Do you mind? She moved forward, forcing me to back up and stepped inside my house, placing the open umbrella on the ground. Sure, I'll just go find him. Sorry about the heat. It's the air conditioning unit. Busted. That's why he's here. Tyler? I called from the hallway. Tyler, someone's here to see you. He came down the steps, and before we could see his face, before he could see us, he said,
I think it's the condenser fan. If you buy a replacement part, I can... Oh, hi, he said, his steps slowing.
I've been trying to reach you, said Mrs. Carter.
I'm sorry, I've been working. We've got a project with a crazy deadline. I've actually got a meeting at 10 down at the county clerk's office. I should probably be heading that way.
Of course. I was just wondering if you've heard from Annalise?
I haven't.
She took another step into the house. When did you last see her? What did she say? Tyler paused, removed his hat, ran his hand through his hair, pulled the hat back down.
We went to a movie after dinner Monday night. I dropped her off a little before 10, had an early morning myself the next day.
Did she mention anything else? What she was planning?
No, I haven't seen her since.
Did she mention going to look at grad schools?
No,
he said. Do you know what she was doing in the woods?
No,